Hi. This is Erin.
This is Jessica.
And this is episode 8 of the Double Knit Podcast.
Erin's a little freaked out right now.
Jessica's coming over was heralded by an exploding light bulb, like, right over my computer. So she comes in and there's, like, pieces of light bulb all over the floor. It, like, popped open and smoke came out the top of the lamp. It was crazy.
Very dramatic.
Yeah. So my heart rate's finally kind of back to normal, but I'm still kind of freaked out.
It's not the usual pyrotechnics that accompany my arrival.
No.
It's usually a little more well-organized and not so scary, so yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay. So what are you knitting?
So there was Ravelympics, and I did my Ravelympics sweater, which was a seamless hybrid with the shirt yoke variation from Knitting Workshop by Elizabeth Zimmerman. And I finished my sweater on time, although it still isn't blocked, and I still want to add some afterthought pockets and decide if I want to put closures on it. So that was sort of a serious set of monogamous knitting there on that for 17 days. And then we went on a cruise to Alaska. Last week. We got back a week ago. And on the cruise, the first day, I brought my Auburn Camp shirt because I thought, like, all right, dedicated knitting time. I'm going to get a lot done here. And I tried knitting on it the first day, and the first day was really rough, and we were all really sick. And so for the rest of the trip, I kept thinking the idea of working on it kind of made me feel sick, you know, or like reminded me of being sick. So fortunately, I brought a backup project. I brought my hexagon blanket.
Super cute.
Yes, thank you. So I got a lot done on that on the trip. And when I got home, too, I even gave it a little steaming to kind of flatten it all out so I could see how it was going a little bit better. So it's getting to be, you know, more blanket-ish, but it still has... I weighed it, and I weighed my yarn, and I'm about a third way through my yarn right now. But I've been watching all my Elizabeth Zimmerman videos, and the other night I was watching it, and they were talking about the pie shawl, and I've always wanted to knit a pie. I just thought, well, forget it. I'm doing it right now. And I ran over, and I grabbed... I have some Angora Merino lace weight that I got when I was at knitting camp from Kim at Croft Farm, and... So I just wound it up and cast on like right away, and you cast on 9, double your stitches by a knit 1 yarn over a round, and then you'll knit like 3 rounds, and then double again, and then 6 rounds, and double, and 12, and double, and da 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 da.
Right.
So after the 12, when I got to the 24 row section, a round section, I wanted to just throw a lace pattern in there. So I just picked one out of Barbara Walker that fit. For the next section, I just picked another one that I thought kind of lined up with it. Doesn't line up perfectly, and I think if I were to do it again, I might even have left myself some blank space between the lace patterns so I wouldn't have to worry so much about how they address one another.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not stressing about it. I'm just going for it and just knitting, knitting. And I'm finishing up my first of 4 skeins right now, so it's getting to be a pretty good size already.
Wow. Yeah, I saw that on your blog. It's really pretty.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So, and it's really soft. It's got a ton of Angora, so it's very nice to work with, but it also leaves fuzz everywhere. And I was, like, when I took myself for a little pedicure for the first day of school, and I was sitting there knitting, and I was in the sunlight, and I could just see, like, tufts of like Angora floating everywhere around me. And I wound some yarn this morning and the whole counter now is like covered in like an inch of fuzz. So one drawback of Angora knitting, but other than that,
and
it's
isn't it
fun.
The same color as your Auburn camp shirt
that I yeah see and it's kind of same color as the sweater I'm wearing right now. I think I'm in a blue phase because my Ravelympics sweater was blue, a very different shade of blue, but I'm definitely you know, there's that period where everything in it was, like, blue, and then I had a period where everything in it was pink, and then green, and I think I'm back to blue again. So, yeah.
Cool.
Well, I had 2 skeins, and the other one was a dark kind of olivey green, and I somehow, I don't know, I have different visions for that, since I like so many lace patterns that have sort of a leafy motif to them.
The
I thought I would
save
the green
good.
For something else, so
I'm
not sure what yet, but yeah.
That would be pretty. Is that same Angora stuff?
It is. It's all... Although there... I got it when Kim at Croft was sort of going out of business, although I don't know if they've really completely gone out of business yet. And so things were sort of peculiarly labeled, and I'm not sure how accurate it all is.
Oh.
So I think they're labeled differently, but I think they're the same yarn. Or actually, I think the difference between them might be the Angora content. Like, one might have more Angora than the other. They might be the same weight, but one has, like, 20% Angora and one's 4. I can't remember right now, but, yeah. But similar. Very nice. Yeah. What are you knitting?
I usually write this down so I can remember. I finished the baby sweater, Audrey's sweater, with the Fair Isle yoke. It's super cute.
It is super cute.
Yeah, I like it. I finished those men's fingerless gloves, and I cast on for a sweater for me because I was waiting to get shoe size to do Noah's dad's felted clogs because Mary Lou was at the Democratic thing in Colorado. I'm trying to be sneaky about it. And then
the sweater you cast on for yourself is
Oblique Veronique Avery.
And the yarn you're using
is Elan Incense. It's a wool, bamboo, silk blend. It's pretty. I finished a sleeve, but then Noah came to a shop to pick out his color for his sweater that I'm giving him for his Christmas present. And it's also green.
And it's also Veronique Avery.
It's also Veronique Avery. It's the his llama cardigan from Knitting Classic Style, which is the first project I've knit from the book. So I cast on for the back, and I finished a sleeve.
Wow. So you finished a sleeve, one for your sweater, one for his sweater?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, we're one-armed people.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, it's fair. It's not like, you know, no one's getting into the lead too much.
Yeah, but his will be finished. It's super fast. It's in Cascade 220, and it's, like, lighter, I guess, heathery green color than my sweater's, like, cypress color. It's super dark olive green. Okay. I think I cast on for the shop Claudie by Black Pearl in...
Panda silk
DK, which I love.
Erin's definitely in love with it. Yeah. She was making little cooing noises at it while she was knitting it. And like,
it's so soft.
Murmuring love notes to it.
Yeah, it's also a bamboo wool silk blend, too.
How does it compare to the Elan one?
Well, the Elan one is like a light worsted, so it's heavier gauge. The panda silk one feels nicer in the hand.
Yeah.
Cool. I love it. I want to knit something out of it for me.
Well, we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, the printed silk cardigan, or you were going to show me one that was a Ravelry one.
I think, Tamsin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should show that one to you, too. It's cute. It's yellow. It's cute. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so that's what I've finished and working on. I'm down to 5 holiday projects, one of which is Noah's sweater.
Oh, cool.
So 3 of them are small and 2 of them are big. So I'll be done.
You're saving Lady Eleanor for the end.
Yeah, I'm saving Lady
That'll
Eleanor.
That'll be fun to be doing on a deadline, like December, you know.
Yeah, well.
2 days before your due date, like, I gotta finish this Entrelacs doll.
Yeah.
Now you've got a lot of time and you're fast.
Yeah. I think it'll knit up faster the second time because I'll probably like the yarn I'm using.
Yeah.
Even though it's not going to be as bulky, I can use Noro Silk Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll block out. Like, I can make it a little bit smaller, and because of the silk, it'll black out.
Yeah.
Larger. So, but I don't have the yarn for it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do Noah's sweater, the small stuff, and then last is Lady Eleanor. Part deux, as we said before. Yes.
So I saw in your kitchen, you're reading a new book. I saw in your kitchen. Oh,
yeah. I read Vile Bodies by Evelyn Waugh. And I don't actually know how I feel about it. There's a lot of, I love 20s slang.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Too shy making. I love it. Like Agatha Runcible, who's the girl who goes crazy in the movie. Yeah. She, I think, was my favorite character. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because I saw the movie first and then just like linked them together and I love that actress. It was overall depressing, just like the movie was. Yeah. But it didn't end the same. Totally different ending.
Oh, yeah.
It ends during kind of the war sequence in the movie. Yeah, lots of loose ends there. I'm not sure how I feel about it. But yesterday I picked up Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides, and I had read Virgin Suicides, I think in junior high.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. Because I remember it very distinctly.
You should reread that, because I'm sure it's a completely different book as an adult as a teen.
Yeah, I should. Wow. I remember really liking it, though.
I love that book. And I love the movie that was made from it. But, yeah, it's when I read it, I really, you know, I just, he's so hard because he's one of these people when you say, oh, I'm reading this really great book, and people go, what's it about? And with Virgin Suicides, it's like, it's a family with five daughters that all commit suicide. Everyone's like, oh, that sounds great. Or then with, you know, Middlesex, oh, what's it about? It's about someone who's, you know, born with male and female genitalia. You know, I'm just like, it's a hard log line. You tell people, it's a really good book about a hermaphrodite. And they're like, what? Okay. Yeah.
But it's really good. I'm just like three chapters in or something. Okay.
I had a hard time starting that. Like the first 50 pages of that book took me probably like 2 weeks where I'd like read three pages and fall asleep. I just wasn't really into it. But after that 50 page mark, I could not put it down. And I didn't sleep for a week while I was finishing it.
The first 50 pages are like backstory and stuff. Before you get, I think you get more into the main character after that. But it's narrated interestingly.
Yeah. It's,
and lots of time changes, like jumping around in time. So
you're following the family through multiple generations.
Yeah, I like that kind
of
stuff.
I do too.
So,
have you read Behind the Scenes of the Museum? I've probably asked you that before. Mm-mm. Kate Atkinson.
No.
You should read that next.
Okay.
It's another one of those like multi-generation family stories, but it's really, really dark and really funny. And it's I love reading that book so much. It's about a girl who's raised in England in the 50s, and it starts from the moment of her conception, where she begins to narrate it at that moment. It's, yeah, it's hilarious and, like, really moving, but also has so many moments of, like, where, like, everything comes together in ways you weren't expecting. Like, I gasped out loud so many times reading the book. Wes is like, what? I'm like, I can't tell you! But the minute I finished it, I, like, thrust it into his hands. I'm like, you must read this! And then I got to listen to him read it and go, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so that's it so far for the reading. Mm. But Middlesex is pretty thick.
Yeah.
So
it goes, take me I mean, while. I found it really engaging. I went through it really quickly.
Yeah.
And I finally finished a tiny book. I finally finished No One Belongs Here More Than You by Miranda July, which I mentioned on the last podcast. And it's a collection of short stories. And the first few I really liked. She has a completely unique voice. And the stories are all really peculiar and strange and kind of poignant, but after a while they're all peculiar and strange and poignant, and they all have sort of the same subtext to them, which is that, like, deep down inside we're all weird and we're all broken and we just have to keep going anyway, and that's just the way we are. And after a while it felt very repetitive, even though the stories were all totally different and about very different people and very different situations, but underneath they're all really the same. And so I got a little bored with it by the end. So now I'm reading Persepolis by Marjane Stapi.
Yeah, I want to read that.
Satarpi, I think that's it. That I can't put down. We watched the movie last weekend.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet either.
It was a great movie, and I was sort of feeling like, oh, I was just talking to Sarah at Pearly Girls was saying that she doesn't want to see the movie because she wants to read the books first. And the books in the movie are really quite different. I mean, you can see how the movie developed out of the source material of the book. But the book tells the stories differently, very differently. It's more of vignettes of sort of memories of childhood and, you know, period of great turmoil in Iran in the 70s and the 80s. And but in the film, they take it and they turn it into more, it's more of a coming-of-age story. So it becomes a little more linear, a little more cohesive as a narrative.
You could see the movie and still read the books.
Yeah, they're quite different. I mean, they
not know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, because she tells a lot more stories in the book than she can get into in the movie, and told slightly differently, but very moving, but also, again, like kind of funny and dark, and she's a little different. So I've been enjoying that a lot, so I've got those. And I'm still reading His Illegal Self by Peter Carey, so when I'm taking a little graphic novel break right now.
Those are good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been watching anything good lately?
Well, besides Persepolis, I can't remember. Did I mention Vicky Cristina Barcelona the last time?
I don't think remember.
I did. I think I watched it after we recorded. We saw Vicky Cristina Barcelona, and I have to say up front, I love Woody Allen. I love him. Annie Hall's my favorite movie ever. And I really enjoyed it. It's very, very charming. It's very light. I mean, you know, there's nothing too serious going on with this, but it was very fun. and really charming and fun and light and fluffy and, you know, good summer movie. Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz are really great in it, and I enjoyed it very, very much. But something else that I watched, I think, like, just before I went to the theater to see Vicky Cristina Barcelona, was Nanni Moretti's Caro Diario. I don't speak Italian, so excuse me. I'm halfway through watching it. It's another one, a thing that's done as vignettes. So there's, like, three vignettes to it, and one is about how he likes to ride through Rome on his moped, and one is about visiting the islands around Italy, and one is about doctors and medicine. And so they're very quirky and funny and very personal. And as I'm watching it, I was like, he's like the Italian Woody Allen. I love this guy. So I would like to see more of his work. But that was a film that had been recommended to me for years and years, and I was like, I don't know. But I really enjoyed it. It was very funny. I mean, it's not, again, it's like the little light, kind of silly, but very enjoyable to watch.
Cool.
What kind of gross zombie movies have you been watching lately?
I haven't watched any zombie movies.
No, nothing gross?
Lately.
Okay. What have you been watching?
Well,
you've been watching Dexter, though.
Yeah, I just picked up season 2 of Dexter from the library. So I'm excited.
Did you watch that yet?
I haven't watched any of it. Sitting right there, staring at me.
He's staring at me.
So I'm excited to watch that. Last weekend, Noah had a show, so he was gone like all day Friday and all night Friday. So I was at home cutting out pattern pieces for baby clothes and watching Project Runway season 1 because I don't have cable. So I'm kind of catching up on all that. It was good. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah. And I watched Broken English with Parker Posey. It's an indie film. And it was really good.
What's kind that of, about?
She's a New Yorker. She is kind of stuck in a rut. She can't find a guy to stay with. She has apparently this series of kind of one-night stands and, like, broken relationships and stuff like that, juxtaposed with her best friend's supposedly really good marriage, which is kind of half broken, but like her best friend, she introduced her best friend to her then boyfriend and they're married. Like, it's her ex-boyfriend and her best friend, and apparently she's okay with this. But she meets this French guy, and, you know, they spend a bunch of time together. She's on some kind of meds for anxiety, like, yada yada yada. She goes to France to find him, you know.
Hilarity ensues.
That's not really hilarious.
No.
But, you know, she kind of finds herself through all the series of things that happen. So I like that, and I love Parker Posey a lot.
I love Parker Posey, too.
I was just thinking about Party... I think it's called Party Girl.
I've still never seen that. I know that's the one where everyone fell in love with her. For me, I think I really fell in love with her seeing House of Yes, which is a little strange.
Oh, I love that movie.
It's kind of... I think I took myself to see it when I was really, really pregnant with my first son, where I was, like, I think I'd finished working, or... I was working retail, so maybe I had, like, a weekday off to myself, and I went to see it in a matinee when I was enormously pregnant, and I loved it, and even though that's a really twisted little movie, but...
It is. I love it, though. It's so good.
I do, too, but I love her, and
I saw her, like, Waiting for Guffman, where she works at the DQ.
See, that was another one where I didn't see it until, like, a year... I think I watched Waiting for Guffman last summer on the flight to camp. Like, I finally, I've got a deal. Like,
wow.
I know, I waited forever to see that. I'd seen Best of Show near around when
she's
it came
She's pretty great
out.
In that, too.
Yeah, she's great in that, too. But I've seen her in a ton of stuff. She had that really horrible TV show that was on last year for, like, 3 episodes that was just painful to watch. Although I watched it, I don't know why.
Because
she waiting, like,
it.
Come on, Parker. Well, Lauren Ambrose from 6 Feet Under was on it with her. They played sisters, but it was so badly written. It was agonizing
That's
to watch.
Too bad.
It drove me crazy. But yeah, no, I love Parker Posey, and she's done some, like, Hal Hartley stuff. I love Hal Hartley, so she was in Henry Fool.
Oh yeah,
and then sort of the somewhat sequel to that, Vagrom, which I haven't seen yet. But
I know I've been watching other stuff, but those are the two that's kind of stuck in my head. Because my friend Nikki was up visiting, and we watched some movies. Oh, I watched Suspiria.
Oh,
not zombie movies.
No, not a zombie movie.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll go ahead and tell our audience about Suspiria.
It was Dario Argento. And if you're into horror at all, you know who he is. And
if you're not into horror, don't watch Suspiria. I've never seen it. My best friend who's, one of my best friends who went to grad school in film,
I remember him calling me after he watched it, and he was like, it's the most disgusting movie I've ever seen. It's the bloodiest, scariest. It's, like, the scariest horror movie ever. And then I was, like, made a mental note, like, never see Suspiria. So I've never seen it. There's a new Argento film coming out.
Yeah.
And Wes and I walked by a poster for it, and we were both like, he's still alive? Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah. I think maybe Sarah saw that. Or wanted to see it at the...
Oh, yeah, SIFF. Sarah said she... Oh, Sarah did see it at SIFF, didn't she?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, she did. We're going to talk all about Sarah this week, apparently. Yeah. Hi, Sarah! Wait, that reminds me of a funny story. We were at Pearly Girls on Monday night, and it was Sarah who said, when are you guys going to record another episode? And we're like, we're sitting here talking to you right now. Like, you've got the live show right now, but they're like, no, they want it, like, recorded and on their iPod for some reason. Like, talking to us in real life is now no longer satisfying.
Well, Amanda says I keep all my good stuff for the podcast.
Oh. So. Do we? I do. Yeah, but. You store it all up.
Yep.
Bottle it deep inside.
Yeah. Blah. There you go. Enough movie and,
let's talk knitting.
Okay.
Because we have both just finished knitting EPS sweaters, and EPS is Elizabeth's percentage system, and Elizabeth in this case is Elizabeth Zimmerman. And I happen to be wearing an EPS sweater right now too, which was not intentional, but I've knit a lot of them and I really love them.
I love them too. And I just knit the baby sweater. And I think that's a really, really great first project for someone who hasn't done it before.
Mm-hmm.
I used the Sweater Workshop.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. Sweater Workshop is by Jacqueline Fee, and it...
Oh, not the Sweater Workshop. Oh, no. The Knitting Workshop.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Okay, the Knitting Workshop.
Because Sweater Workshop is Jacqueline Fee's book that is about EPS, and it's not one of these books that rips off EPS. It says, like, this is based on the work of Elizabeth Zimmerman, but she, for people who want a little more hand-holding, she does it more as, like, a worksheet, where you... you know, she has you calculate your gauge and you fill in all these things and calculate your measurements or you measure what you want. And so she kind of breaks it down. And then she also has a lot of detail on add-on things like how to add a hood and how to change the neckline and adding pockets or different things like that.
Yeah, Elizabeth does that too. It's just not all together, I don't think.
Yeah, and it's not as spelled out. Like, I don't know if there's anywhere in Elizabeth's... Well, I'm sure there probably is, like, a how to do, like, the kangaroo pouch pocket or... Anyway, but, yeah. But, so you did a yoke version.
I did a Pharaoh yoke version. And the one thing... You do your gauge swatch, and instead of doing, like, you cast on less if you're going to do ribbing, and then you add stitches, I just did a C-stitch, so it's more like a little A-line or straight.
Yeah, just draw in.
And then for the sleeves, instead of casting on 25% and increasing to 33% of your total stitches, or of the body, because each sleeve is 33% of the body stitches. That's how you figure that out. I just cast on the whole 33% at once, because baby arms are fat.
Right.
So I just knit a little tube.
Yeah. And she mentions that in some of her books about that you, if you want to do, like, ribbing, you do your increases right away for baby arms, because baby arms don't taper at all.
Right.
And actually, that's what my Ravolympic sweater is 3/4, and it's a bell sleeve. And on one of the videos, I can't remember which one it might be, Elizabeth mentions that if you want to make a bell sleeve, don't cast on some crazy number of stitches and then decrease back down and then increase back up for your sleeve. Just cast on your final number of stitches that you want, and for most of her sweaters, that's 33% of your total body circumference, and just knit straight up, and that the taper of your arm will make the sleeve look like it's, you know, bigger at the cuff and more fitted at the top. And so that's what I did on mine. And it's a great way to do a bell sleeve, because there's some patterns out there that are, like, insane. They have... Well, Hourglass is one. I mean, most people who are knitting the Hourglass sweater from Last Minute Knitted Gifts, if you read blogs, everyone who starts the sweater starts one of the sleeves and is like, dude, what is up with these sleeves? They're huge! And because it's one of these ones where you cast on a huge number of stitches and then decrease back down, and then you got to increase back up for the rest of the sleeve, and it makes a really...
exaggerated bell.
Right.
And that's fine if you want a really exaggerated bell sleeve, but most people it's not as practical because it's just going to get in your way. And
like if you want a goth bell sleeve, then there you go.
Or if you want sleeves that you will be sure to like dip in all of your food.
Because that's delicious.
Yes. I'm just picturing someone like sucking on their cups.
Ew. Yeah. You know what happens. You know it happens.
That it happens?
I'm sure it happens. I bet it does.
I'm sure it does. I'm sure all sorts of disgusting things happen that I would rather not think about, so let's cast that aside for a moment.
Okay.
Let's see. What else do we want to talk about with EPS? I mean, there's...
Well, when I first started, I felt like I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I know how to knit. Why is this... Because I hadn't used, like, a kind of a template thing mm-hmm. before. So it was really good to kind of just trust my knitting instincts mm-hmm. and, like, go for it. Because you can...
Yes, you can undo. Well, that was funny because we were discussing this in front of a pretty new knitting student last night at the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, wait, so you just knit a sweater without a pattern? Thinking, well, yes, but
and no.
Yeah. Yes, I don't need someone to tell me, cast on 32 stitches for this, do this, do this. But I you know, I have that guidance there and that, you know, I have that faith that I know this works. And actually, my first experience, or first few experiences knitting EPS sweaters, I think, I'm going to get my history wrong, but I knit a retro prep sweater, which was a sweater that was in an interweave several years ago. I think it was like a 2000 or 2002, maybe 2002 interweave. And at the time, I didn't know it was an EPS sweater. And actually, and the article doesn't say anything about it, but it is... an EPS sweater down to the stitch. And mm-hmm. actually, there's a lot of them out there, like the cobblestone sweater
uh-huh.
that that Jared Flood did in Interweave last year. That is to the stitch an EPS sweater.
Yeah.
And there's no mention of Elizabeth anywhere in there. And it's like everyone's just sort of adopted all of this, and there's no credit ever given anymore, which is mm-hmm. unfortunate. But so I knit the retro prep where you knit, you know, I guess for people who don't know, you knit the body... You knit up to the armholes and you know, knit a tube up. The thing I love about the retro prep sweater, though, is that it does add some waist shaping that happens to work very well for my figure. So I've at like the sweater I'm wearing right now, I took the waist shaping for this from the retro prep also. And that was something else I was mentioning last night, that waist shaping, less is more.
Right.
You know, just a couple decreases, a little bit of plain knitting, and a couple increases is more than enough for most people for waist shaping, that I think some people feel like they have to do too much, and you get a really, again, it's like the bad bell sleeve where you get
super hourglass.
Yeah, something that comes in too much, and then, anyway, so, you knit the body up to the armholes, set it aside.
Knit your sleeves.
Start the sleeve of the cuff, knit those up to the armhole length.
Right.
Set, and then you knit them all together by knitting across the sleeve stitches, across the back of the sweater, the other sleeve stitch, while putting, but you reserve, 8% of the body and the sleeve stitches on some waist arm. That'll be the underarm, and that gets grafted together at the end. But so then you knit it all together. But once you've knit it all together, that's where, if you're working in a knitting workshop, you now, like, the world is your oyster. Like, you can do a yoke, you can do a raglan, you can do a hybrid, mm-hmm. you can do a set-in sleeve, you can do a saddle shoulder, you can do anything at that point.
Right.
So that's sort of the same start for all of those sweaters. But when I did the retro prep, I didn't know that that's what I was doing. Sitcom Chic is done in a similar style, which is that...
Tangled Yoke Cardigan is similar mm-hmm. construction.
Yeah.
Because that was the first one I did where you did that grafting under the arms mm-hmm. and knit the tubes. The tubes.
Yeah.
The waist tube.
I always think of it as tubes also. Yeah. Body tube. I remember actually when I was knitting, I've knit several versions of retro prep, and sometime on my blog I said something about how I'd finished the body tube, and someone had left in the comments like, what pattern is the body tube? Like, she thought like that was the name of a sweater I was knitting. Some sort of wool bandeau top. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Boo.
Yeah. I just saw a sweater that was really cute that someone had done. It was short sleeve, very sweet little kind of vintage-y style sweater, but it was done in Cascade 220. And I love Cascade 220, but I don't want a short sleeve wear against your skin sweater at a Cascade 220.
Yeah, I don't think that was an
odd choice of material for that. Mm-hmm. That it just seemed like it would be too... I mean, I don't really understand short sleeve wool sweaters anyway. It's like, if you're wearing wool, It's because you want to stay warm. If you're wearing short sleeves, because you don't want to be too warm. I don't get that. So that doesn't work for me. But, yeah. Where did I just go then? I just confused myself.
I don't know.
You start talking.
Okay. well, what I like about the system is you can knit it like a pullover if you just add the steeks in, mm-hmm. and then you steek it, and it's a cardigan. Woo!
Yeah. Mine, the one I did for Rev Olympics, is cardigan.
The baby sweater's a cardigan, too.
Yeah. And so you didn't have any problem? You were steeking a super wash wool, so that didn't give you any trouble?
No, I used my sewing machine to sew the steeks. To sew it down and then cut it. And then I used a ribbon to hide a little stripy ribbon to hide the steeks.
Mm-hmm.
So they look nice and neat.
On mine, I do something that, well, actually, Meg Swanson doesn't do this anymore because she pretty much just does crocheted steeks now, I think. I've had bad luck with crocheted steeks. I think it's because I'm not I don't crochet very firmly. And also, it depends really on the yarn you're using. If you're using Shetland wool, apparently you don't need to do anything to secure the steeks.
Self-felt.
Yeah, or you can do the crocheted steek. It works very nicely. I tried it once in a workshop where I was doing using Cascade 220, and my steeks, just the crochet part just fell right off, and then I had to do all these emergency measures of, you know, trying to secure all those ends. But so on mine, I machine stitch and cut. And then on the cardigan details video that Meg did, she shows how you just can kind of tuck those fuzzy bits underneath that, you've got like two stitches worth of folded over and then half a stitch worth of fuzz, and that you can just tuck that fuzz underneath and then just whip stitch with a needle and thread, and it cleans it up really well. And on my, the Fair Isle yoke one that I did a couple years ago that I was wearing at work yesterday. I mean, you can't even really see anything that I've done there. It's all kind of worked in.
Yeah, it's just like the ribbon, because it was a super wash.
Yeah.
And so it was a little difficult to tuck the ends in. They didn't want to, like, kind of felt together or anything. So
the ribbon, it looks, I mean, it's a really nice treatment to do that on a sweater. I like the way it looks. I'm just too lazy, I think, to do it. I think Bon Marie also mentions that on a sitcom sheet, because the fronts on that tend to curl. She only gives you like two selvage stitches, which isn't quite enough. And she mentions putting a ribbon in there, and that's a nice way to.
It does look really nice.
Stabilize that,
especially if I'm gonna machine wash it. I think that the ribbon will help hold everything in there.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but it turned out really well, and I'm excited to do like a full size like adult EPS sweater.
Do you know what you'd like to do?
I have no idea.
No?
Oh. Probably a cardigan. I love cardigans.
I do too.
I mean, it's pretty much what I'm wearing right now because my stomach's getting fairly big.
Yeah, so. Erin's all pregnant now. She finally switched over to maternity wear, and she walked by me at work yesterday, and I was like, you're all pregnant. What is that tummy? Yeah. So.
And I play my belly like a bongo.
Yeah, and now everyone comes, likes it. Like, you're finally at the point where people feel comfortable talking to you about it, so that everyone at work's like, so when do you do?
Yeah,
asking lots of questions.
Noah was laughing because I was telling him about that. I'm like, all day. Everybody who came in was like, when do you do? When do you do? When do you do? And that's the first time that's happened.
Yeah. I remember the first time someone asked me that, and I thought he was saying, what do you do? And I was like, I work over there. What? Who are you? Why are you asking me that?
But, and I haven't had any of the crazy, like, people reaching out to touch me.
No one ever tried that with me.
Really?
No.
I don't think I give off that friendly vibe.
No. And really, I worked at a mall, so I was in contact with a lot of people every day when I was pregnant. No one ever asked or attempted to touch me.
Yeah.
I think I also give off that vibe.
Don't.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, it must be the New Yorker in me, which just reminded me of my whole rant yesterday of, I was reading someone's coverage of the Republican National Convention. And she was talking about how badly Rudy Giuliani came off. And she said that she was chalking it up to the fact that he was a New Yorker, that he just seemed really nasty. And I'm like, please, he's a rat bastard. That's why he came off badly. Not to get too political here, but, I mean, you know, he came off badly because he's an unappetizing person, not because he's from New York. So lay off the New Yorkers. People feel very free, especially here. I don't know, something about being in Seattle, it's like, it's so far from New York, people forget that New Yorkers are here, because people feel so comfortable just painting this, you know, painting us all as like the rudest, most horrible people I'm like, you know, come on. Not everyone from New York is the same person. So, I mean, I can be rude a little bit with the best of them, but
I'm walking here.
Not as a rule. Yeah, I know. So, like, my kids are always like, I can't, that's the one thing I can't stop doing is like when I get behind the wheel of a car, like even though my husband taught me to drive, I didn't learn to drive until I was 23. Even though he taught me how to drive, when I get behind the wheel of a car, I turn into my father. And suddenly everything's like, hey, lady, what are you doing? Pick a lane. You know, like, I don't know where it comes from. It's just like, wells
up. That's
so
funny. Because
Buddy.
No, it's always laughing at me because I call any woman driver who I have a problem with, I say, hey, lady, blah, 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 blah. But then any guy, I'm like, you a-hole, blah, 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 blah. Like, it's not as polite.
Yeah, well, but the kids are always like, the first time I ever did that in front of my kids where I called someone a name, like, and I knew I was bad with it when someone ran a stop sign and cut me off at a four-way intersection once, when my oldest son was still a toddler, and I slammed on the brakes, and, you know, we lurch forward and back, and this voice in the back seat goes, idiot! So he learned, I guess, that when you stop short, you call someone an idiot. And one day, too, when he got a little older, when he started preschool, I called someone a moron or something while we were driving, and he said, Mommy, don't call names. That makes my feelings hurt. So they still are always like, how come you're calling names? Or remembering, like, that. Remember that truck that you yelled at, like, that tried to run us over in the intersection? So, yeah, I'm a bad influence on my children, which I will chalk that up to my New York upbringing. But the rest of it, leave us alone.
So, back to knitting.
Yeah, back to knitting. Sorry, you can cut that out.
I don't know, it's kind of funny. I'm probably gonna be real. I highly recommend the knitting workshop.
Yes.
Because it's got Baby Surprise, it's got Tonton, it's got EPS. She has you, I didn't do it, but you can start out in the beginning, kind of work your way through and, like, build all your skills. Mm-hmm.
Knit a hat.
Yeah, get comfortable with, like, you know, doing your swatch and measuring and then, like, doing a hat from that. And I think that's a really good way to kind of build up your Zimmerman confidence.
Yes, and then she takes you through all the different sweater shapings you could possibly want. There's a Norwegian sweater in there. You get the yoke. You get all the different, the 7 seamless sweater shape chapter, which has tons of information and kind of any. I mean, you could really knit from that book pretty much forever and be pretty good. It doesn't
it has
the abbreviated pie shawl. Where it has just the basic instructions of, like, cast on, double, knit this many, double, 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 so on. And it doesn't have any of the lace insertions. I think a lot of times in Knitter's Almanac, I believe, she gives instructions for some basic lace patterns that if you go through Ravelry and look at people's pie shawls, you'll see most people have this sort of diamond thing going on their pie shawl. And that is, the instructions for that, I think, are in Knitter's Almanac.
But if you have a lace or like a Barbara Walker treasury or any of those, then you can just figure out your stitches around and choose something to stick in you did.
Yeah.
Or you're doing.
Yeah. And one thing to keep in mind then is that you're knitting in the round and not knitting back and forth. And all of Barbara Walker's instructions are for flat knit, you know, assuming that you're knitting back and forth in rows instead of in rounds. So sometimes you have to adapt a little bit. I made it easy on myself and I only picked patterns that were, that had one pattern row and then, you know, where you purl back so that I'd get a little rest row in between, which I like. You get that on most of, like, Evelyn Clark's patterns where you get that sort of what I think of, like, the resting row where you just, you know, on Evelyn's you're working flat, so you just purl back.
Right.
And on this I get a free round where I just get to knit around, whereas the Frost Flower and Leaves, which is still in a bag in my closet because I haven't finished it.
It's pattern every row.
And it's kind of intense, and, you know, this one is a lot easier to just sort of throw down and pick up and be like, oh, where was I? Oh, I see, I'm on a knitting row now.
Yeah, so I think that'd be a good beginner lace project, especially knitting in the round.
Yeah.
Intermediate, maybe.
It is and it isn't, because the one thing about doing a circular shawl, though, is that it's going to end up being, it's a lot more knitting.
Yeah.
You know, if you do an Evelyn Clark shawl.
Molly's cherry blossom shawl, it's freaking huge.
Yeah. Oh, no. Or did that one end up really big?
The pink one? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen ones at camp. People come for show and tell, and they'll say things like, they're always sort of, they'll hedge the story with like, well, so I didn't know how much this was going to block out, and I was trying to, and they give this whole long story, and then they're like, whoo, pull out the shawl that like,
it's like a lace tablecloth.
Oh, it's bigger than that. They need like three people to help them hold it up and display it. And they're, I mean, it's wow. One of the campers this year had one that was so large there was no room anywhere in her house to block it out. So she blocked it on her lawn. It was that large. It was, there's some massive ones. And fortunately, Amy Dachin, one of the teachers at camp, is a very, very tall woman. I'm not sure exactly how tall she is, but well over 6 feet tall. And so whenever we have one of these huge shawls, we're like, Amy, come here. And you can put it on her, and then it's not dragging on the ground. Right. But with a circular shawl, at least, you can fold it back over on itself mm-hmm. and, you know, to different degrees, depending how you want to wear it. But I think a triangle shawl is usually the easiest place to start because it's less knitting. You know, maybe it's just me. Like, I'm one of these people where it's like, I'll get halfway through and be like, this is hard and it's taking a really long time. So I think a triangle is a little quicker way to a finished lace shawl.
Yeah, but that's a great book.
Yes.
I love it.
Love Knitting Workshop. And I just got the DVD that goes with Knitting Workshop, and I only started watching it when I got back from vacation and found the sweater that I was copying for my Rev Olympic project that I'd already finished is actually discussed in the video. And it would have really helped to watch that before I knit the sweater. but there's all sorts of wonderful stuff, and you really get a feel for Elizabeth and for Meg.
Yeah, and I don't think people should be put off by... I know some people are put off by, like, lack of written out instructions, but she really does walk you through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can read
yeah,
and do basic math, which I know is hard for some people, but you can use a calculator even.
Yeah.
Then you know how to do a swatch, then I think you're good.
Yeah, I shouldn't have. I took the bait. Someone started a bit of a flame war on... There's a group specifically for the Baby Surprise Jacket on Ravelry,
mm-hmm.
and basically said, you know, when is someone going to finally do a version of this that makes sense and, you know, write it out in a way that's understandable and blah, blah. And there are all these comments about how it was, like, unreadable and ununderstandable and... Which is not a word, I guess, but anyway.
Ununderstandable.
But... And I, of course, you know, I took the bait and I said, I think the thousands of knitters who have knit this sweater for the last few decades would disagree. but I can completely understand that it's not that not everyone can understand. I mean, it's a style thing. I mean, some people really just get lost in the text.
Right.
And it's difficult for them to ferret out what they need to do you know, everyone has a different learning style. Some people are much more visual.
Right.
And some people are, you know, it's the same way. Like, I have a very difficult time knitting lace from written out instructions. Mm-hmm. Like, if you show me a lace pattern, it says like row 38, knit to da, 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 and the, you know, the text goes on. My eyes glaze over. I get lost in that. Yeah. I have a very hard time tracking.
Awesome.
I need charts, but I have students who cannot work from a chart.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me, because that's how my brain works. You know, when I see a chart, I'm like, that makes sense to
right.
me. And when they see a chart, it's like gobbledygook. And when they see the written out instructions, that makes sense to them. So, you know, everyone has a different learning style. And, you know, I want to be understanding of that. But to, you know, to say that the Baby Surprise Jacket is not a good pattern and
yeah.
needs to be redone by someone was a bit too much for me.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah. Well, and I taught the Baby Surprise Jacket as a class, and I will say it was the least successful class I've ever taught. I had a group of students who really did not connect with it, where, you know, Elizabeth, I feel like she's always prompting you to really understand what you're doing, to understand your knitting, to be able to read your work, you know, be able
to... People have a hard time with that.
Yeah, to be able to pick something up and say, oh, well, I did this decrease here on the last row, so now I'm knitting, or whatever it is. And, yeah, some people just want to be told. They don't want to have to look. But really, at some point, you have to make that, I think, this is just opinion, that you have to make that leap as a knitter to understanding what you're doing. Otherwise, you're going to stall out. I mean,
right.
you'll butt up unless you only, you know, have to search high and low to find the the best written out pattern. I mean, I suppose you could work off of other people's work forever, but at some point, you know, you're going to get a phone call in the middle of your knitting and put it down. You come back, you have to be able to pick it up and say, did I just work a decrease or am I on, you know, row three?
And I see that a lot for project help, like even last night. Like, this is how you read your knitting.
And that was just a new knitter.
That was a new knitter.
She couldn't understand which is a, she was trying to learn how to rib and which is the knit and which is the purl.
Right.
But there are people who are, you know, really confident knitters to a point who've been knitting, you know, and you can give them certain patterns and they can knit, but they'll say to you, am I on row one or row two? And it's like, well, row two is plain knitting and row one is lace. So, you know, and the fact that they can't look at their work and see that always kind of, you know, like, slow down, look at what you're doing, look at what's on your needles, learn to understand your knitting a little bit better. That'll make everything
better. Well, I think if you just pick up an Elizabeth Zimmerman book, it is kind of like, because they aren't like pretty glossy pictures. It's a lot of text. I think that freaks people out, but if you do take it step by step, just like you would a written out pattern, and just follow it through, I think you can do great things with it.
And I also love to plug the knitting glossary DVD that Meg has revised since the original one that she recorded with Elizabeth. It has practically everything you'd ever want to, and if you're a visual person, anything you want to know, like how do I do a Channel Allen cast on? How do I do a German twisted cast on? How do I do this kind of decrease? How do I do this kind? And then she walks you through sweater shapes and all sorts of different kitties getting in trouble. but she walks you through, I mean, there's so much information on that. It's a huge collection and really, really useful. So that's a great reference if you want some resources.
So yeah, great resources. Love it. Sorry, I just had to take a break, a quick break to yell at my cat because she's scratching to be let into the bedrooms.
All right, well, we've been talking for a really long time.
Yeah, wow.
We're all fired up about Elizabeth Zimmerman.
We love her.
We love her. Okay, so that's it for this week.
Yeah. I'd like to say hi to Pinaguri. I know I'm saying your name wrong, but she PM'd me on Ravelry saying that we have international listeners. So hello, all y'all.
Well, we mentioned she had done a beautiful stranded knit damask pattern shawl. She's actually working on a second one now, but we mentioned it, and didn't she say that someone...
Someone told her that she was mentioned on the podcast.
And she lives in Oslo?
I think she said it was Oslo,
So, hi to Norway!
Hello!
So that's fun. Cool.
So, hi to all our international listeners.
Yes.
Noah came home and I'm like, we're international.
It's crazy. And also thanks to everyone who's been participating on the Ravelry group for the podcast, because that's really fun.
It is to see
everybody
chat
with y'all.
So if you have questions about the Zimmerman, or Zimmerman ranting, or comments about
how to drive like a New Yorker. Yeah.
How Zimmerman's stuff does or doesn't work for you, I'd kind of be interested to see like what the stumbling blocks people find for themselves are.
That would be interesting to see, so long as it's a nice respectful conversation, because we have to all acknowledge that she's a genius and we love her even if we have a hard time understanding her sometimes.
So that's it. I guess we'll talk to you next time.
Bye
bye.